within several other social circles. So without any further ado, I'd like to bring before you this evening's keynote speaker, Dr. Robert Shuler.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good evening. How are you? I'm so honored to be here. I never take speeches on Saturday night, because Saturday night in my work, since I work on Sunday mornings, I belong to the wrong religion, see. And every Saturday night is like cramming for the finals. You know what that's like?
I went through that this past.
Did you? Who's that pretty girl next to you? Are you? You never forget what finals are like, do you? Congratulations to all of you. But I accepted this invitation out of my profound admiration, respect, esteem, and affection for W. Dean Muhammad. I consider him one of the truly greatest spiritual leaders in the United States of America. And when I heard he would be here, I said, yes, I want to come. And to his esteemed son-in-law, Dr. Habash, with whom I've enjoyed wonderful times tonight, the son-in-law of the Grand Mufti Kuftaro. And I've said to people around the world that my several meetings with the Grand Mufti in Damascus, in my meeting there, I felt I met one of the truly, probably one of the five greatest spiritual leaders in the 20th century, anywhere in the world. I can't say enough about my admiration and respect and esteem for him. And I felt I was truly in the presence of a man in whose life God really lived beautifully. And then another reason why I wanted to come here tonight is not because I have anything special to share with you. You're all smarter than I am, but I wanted to affirm your faith. And your faith at its best has a wonderful history. And your faith, like mine at its worst, has its problems. You know, the Grand Mufti said to me, he said, religion comes and falls like rain from heaven, and everything needs it for life. There is no life without the fresh rain, and the rain falls from heaven, it is pure, it is clean. And then somebody comes and pollutes the water. It happens all the time, and it happens in every religion. It happens in the best of the traditions. And so our job as spiritual leaders is to purify from pollution waters that people need for life. And thank you. Encourage me. I was looking at my religion, which is following of Jesus Christ. It's called normally Christianity, though I try to avoid that term because Christianity has some bad things in its history. So I simply like to call myself a follower of Jesus Christ. I speak to people through television around the world, and many of the countries where I speak to, I could not use the word Christian because it has some bad stuff that comes with that word. So I don't want to be called a Christian or into Christianity. I want to be called a follower of Jesus Christ and one who loves my God. Why is it that our great religions, yours and mine, why is it? Well, these centuries and we still have the wars and the rumors of war. Why is it that we still haven't lifted enough people above poverty into prosperity? What's wrong? Where are we failing? What can we do better? I just made a few notes that I think is true for most religions, if not all. We tend to be hung up on religion more than we are on relationships. And religion is a movement, an institution. Relationships is vitality in life. I think it's because religions tend, by their nature, to be into indoctrination instead of education. I think it's because most religions tend to be focused on sins rather than sin. Let me say what I mean there. Some may not understand me. Religions all have their own ideas of labeling that is a sin, that's a sin, that's a sin, that's a sin. My religion does, so does yours. And I think we ought to concentrate more on sin than sins. What is sin? Sin, at its deepest root, we can agree, is lack of faith. It is a condition before there's any negative action. You know, we are all born without faith. Eric Erickson, the father of child psychiatry, taught us that every child born, every human being that comes into existence, comes as a newborn baby, non-trusting. In the first 2 years of life, the human being has to learn trust. I said, when I first heard that, that's not true. The baby suckles the mother's breast, surely the baby trusts. Not true. The baby is feeding itself, satisfying hunger, instinctively. No person is ever born with faith. We have to find it, create it, build it, and accept it. And if we focus on building faith in people, instead of pointing to certain things they're doing that may be sinful, I think we'd be doing a better job of building a people. That's another problem with religion. It focuses too much on guilt and not enough on affirming the value and the worth of every human being. Another problem is we focus on creeds more than caring. We focus on trying to convert people to what we are rather than just being a beautiful missionary, loving them, caring for them, helping them, encouraging them, affirming them. Another problem I have with religions, they concentrate on answers, and they never stop and ask questions. And then when everybody thinks they've got the right answers, and all of their answers are right. I'm into architecture very heavily, and one of the great architects, his name escapes me for a moment, who did the Kimball Art Gallery in Fort Worth, Texas. He ready to go and start building it, and the donor said, "I found doorknobs I'd like to have." And he said, "My dear, when we're this stage, ready to build the building, I have all the answers, including what doorknobs to use. Let me tell you something. When I've got all the answers, I can be sure of one thing. Some of my answers are wrong." That, to me, is humility. More interested in pride, I think, in most religions than we are in humility. But, you know, we want to say that we're the best. Maybe we are, but humbly, what could I do that would be better? How can I be a better Christian? I'm not going to say I'm as good or better than you or any other religion, but I will ask the question, what can I do that's better? And then the emphasis in too many religions is on being exclusive rather than inclusive. And we cut people out instead of making it easy for them to come in. And religions tend to be too focused on the word and the letter instead of on the spirit. And we tend to preach to people instead of motivating them. In the process, we put them down instead of building them up. Now, in both our faiths, yours and mine, I want to share with you how we can all be really great in our faith. And I'll use the word our faith, not our religion. You probably have read some of my books or have heard me talk, and you know that I have a banner that I use all the time. It's called possibility thinking. Possibility thinking. There are two kinds of people in the world, two kinds of people in all religions, yours and mine. There are negative people and positive people. There are impossibility thinkers and there are possibility thinkers. A great idea can go out in this room and some of you would say, well, we can't do it or it won't work or it's been tried and somebody failed or I'm too busy, and they make it as instinctively, impertinently, a logical, an illogical number of reasons why it shouldn't be done. The possibility thinker sees the problems. He's not dumb. He sees the same potential obstacles that you do. But he's open because he tends to believe that anything is possible. I am addicted to what I call this possibility thinking. And in terms of excelling, I want you to know that it's the possibility thinkers that excel. Again and again and again and again and again and again and again. Why do they excel? They excel because they are people of God. If you're a real possibility thinker, nothing's impossible with God, so you become a person in God's family. And God's people are sincere. They're caring. They're unselfish. They're good people. So instead of just trying to dream of ways in which they can make a lot of money, they start in success by asking a question, who needs it? The secret of success to young people, let me tell you, very simple. Find a need and fill it. Find the hurt and heal it. Find a problem. Solve it. Do you know the difference between the great people and the not great people? It's simple. The great people simply had greater ideas, bigger dreams. They saw more hurt, they saw needs, and they went after it. Yeah. Biggest person is the person with the biggest dream. And you can dream as big as you want to. I like to tell the story of a fisherman who was sitting there and a tourist walked by and he saw the old man with a bucket where he put his fish to take home and eat. And he saw the pole bend, he pulled the fish. There was a ruler that the fisherman had, it was 10 inches. And he measured the fish, it was 9 inches, so he put it in a bucket. Caught another one, measured it, it was 9.5 inches, he put it in the bucket. And so it went. Then he caught a big one, and he took it off, and he threw it back. And the tourist said, why do you keep the little ones? Throw the big one back. The guy said, well, my frying pan is only 10 inches. Yeah. You want to know the name of that fisherman? You're looking at him. It's Robert Shearer. Your Excellency W. Dean Muhammad, I love you. I love you. I love you. Love you. What a holy, happy interruption that is. I hope you're feeling better. So the truth is, that fisherman that throws the big ones back, you see him in the mirror every day too. We tend to take our biggest dreams and throw them away for one reason only. We know they're impossible. Well, that's no excuse. That's not even smart. That's not at all. Because what's impossible today may be possible tomorrow or next year. The world is changing. So, always make a commitment to a great idea that will help a lot of people, even if it looks like it's impossible. Now, so possibility thinkers believe that really nothing is impossible. It just looks that way. So we seek success by looking for needs, trying to find the need and fill it. And there's another reason why possibility thinkers succeed, and that is they really care about people. That's what it all gets down to. It's a real love. You know, three kinds of love. I love you because I want you. Or I love you because I need you. Then there's the man of God. I love you because you need me. The kind of people that God shapes are good people. And the dreams they dream are beautiful dreams. And when they get a dream, it comes through prayer. Possibility thinkers, you know, cannot abandon or abort a God-given dream. I was 4 years and 9 months old when my Uncle Henry put his hand on my head and said, you're going to be a preacher when you grow up. And that night I prayed, now lay me down to sleep and make me a preacher when I grow up. And I said, what do I have to do, Uncle Henry? He said, well, first of all, you go to school for 20 years. And I said, okay. I had no other plans. So at the age of 5, I set a 20-year goal. 8 years in school, 4 years in high school, 4 years at the university, 3 years in the theological seminary, a year of internship, 20 years. 20-year goal. Well, then I became a minister, and Norman Vincent Peale was my mentor. And he wanted a positive thinking church on the West Coast, and he asked me if I'd go start one. And he said, I'll give you $500, which is not much. We're Dutch. And the Dutch are known for being kind of tight. You know. They tell the story about an Englishman and an Irishman and a Scotsman that sat and ordered some soup in the cafe outdoors in Paris, and flies flew over and landed in the soup. Have you heard this one? And so they all of God each had a fly in his soup. The Englishman. The English always can be very, very sophisticated. Took a silver spoon, dipped the fly, put it in the ashtray, covered it with a napkin. And ate it. The Irishman, they're different. He lifted up the soup and blew it. Now the Dutchman, he looked down and he grabbed the fly by the wings, lifted it, and shook it. Are you catching it? And he said, okay, spit it out. Thank you. I don't really know what you expected from me tonight. Why did you invite me here anyway? Well, so I started with $500, and you know what we landed up doing? We landed up building a Crystal Cathedral. And that cost a few dollars. And, after that, I got a national reputation for raising money. I didn't particularly care for their reputation, but that's what I ended up with. In fact, they made a joke about it. I think Johnny Carson told it first. Sure, Billy Graham And Oral Roberts were in a plane, it crashed, he died, went to heaven, and they weren't ready for us. So they said, you've got to go down there. When we get your rooms ready, we'll call you. We went down there. We went there alone, and St. Peter got a call. You've got to get these three guys out of here. I mean, Billy Graham's going to save the souls, and Oral Roberts is trying to heal the sick, but this Robert Schroeder, he's raising money to air condition the place. Well, anyway. Having fun? All of you nice people. Why possibly do thinkers succeed? They succeed because they are in touch with God. They are God's people. Their definition of success is helping find a need and filling it. And their values are deep. They love because they know people need this love. And then they get dreams, impossible dreams. If a dream comes from God to your head and you can pull it off, I don't know. I think you dreamed it up. But if you get an idea and it's impossible, you better listen to it. That's how God operates. He gives dreams. They're impossible. Why? Because he wants to be a part of it. And he wants to help you succeed. And he wants you to be thankful and humble when it all comes together. Take it seriously. And then the dreamers of great dreams, you know. Well, they never give up. If you get a dream and it comes from God, you cannot abort it. You cannot abandon it. God trusted it to you. He believes in you. That's why he gave it to you. And you can't do anything but, as near as possible, perfection. Because you have to turn the dream into an achievement and then give it back to him and say, here it is, God. I did the best I could. So the compulsion to excellence is a divine gift of stewardship within a believer. Wow. And where do we start? You start by, you just don't even believe in the word impossible. I want to tell you just a couple of stories of two great men. One was a man named James Poppin. He went to the Hope Academy, I went to Hope College. And when he got through the academy, he was such a lousy student and such a poor student that he didn't go to college. And he went to Chicago to look for a job. And somehow he got to a library and looking for a job, I think as a janitor. And there he ran into a book. He sat down, looked at a book. Now let me tell you, months later, his father in the farmhouse in Michigan was awakened at night with the sound of an intruder. And his dad, old Papa, quietly walked through the dark. The noise was coming from the kitchen. And when he got in the kitchen, walked through the open door, he almost stumbled over ropes tied about 12 inches above the floor. And then he saw his son on his hands and knees, tying rope to the chair legs. And he thought, my son is flipped. He's crazy. And then his son, James, said, Dad, get out of here. I'm working. Dad said, what do you mean working? He said, Dad, I ran into a book in a library in Chicago. It was the book about the brain. And what an unbelievable thing that is in our skulls. And I decided I want to be a brain surgeon. And I said, son, you got to be smart to become a doctor. He said, well, I don't think you need to be this smart. He said, if you can learn to tie knots in the dark, you can be a brain surgeon. So I'm practicing tying knots in the dark. Jump ahead some years. Aristotle of Ephesus. The plane crashes with his son aboard. Any hope? There's one brain surgeon that might be able to do it. Dr. James Boston. James Poppin from Boston. And Aristotle sent his plane. Took James Poppin back. Didn't save the boy. And I was remember riding to church one morning when the news broke. Bobby Kennedy was shot at the Biltmore Hotel. And Dr. James Poppin, the world's leading brain surgeon, is flying to see him now. Yeah. Maybe you didn't get good grades. Maybe you don't think you're smart. Maybe you got air grades. Maybe you flunked out. But you can do anything you want to do. Nothing is impossible. We have been bombarded by authority figures who pass us or fail us and give us a grade or don't give us a grade, and we land up with a negative self-image. And so we put ourselves down and we block the doors. We are our greatest obstacle. You are a person. You are loaded with potential.
Next story. Boarded the plane in New York. I have to open my briefcase and the man sitting next to me saw the book with my picture on it and said, you write books? I said, yes. What about? I said, well, possibility thinking. He said, I write books too. And I said, what about? And he said, I write books about mathematics. I'm Dr. George Tomczyk. Maybe you've heard of me. I said, I'm awfully sorry, but I haven't. Well, he said, I'm considered the leading mathematics professor in America today, and I'm just on my way back from an international congress in Vienna, and the President of the United States sent me there. Ooh, I was impressed. He said, I teach mathematics at Berkeley. Oh. I said, you know, I have a brand new idea. Never thought of before. I tell people anybody can be possibility thinker. It makes a difference in all of life, in your relationships, marriage, business, career, religion, faith, prayers. Impacts every part of your life. But doesn't make a difference if you're in mathematics. 2 times 2 is 4. 4 times 4 is 16. Whether you're negative or positive. Does it make any difference? In fact, I said, I haven't even enthused about this. I think I'll take these negative thinking people that don't change and tell them to all become mathematicians. He said, that's for sure, you're wrong, and let me prove it to you. It's my story. It's my true story. I was a senior at Berkeley, and we would soon graduate, and the Depression was on. And all of us knew we would have to join the soup lines. And that's literally true. You young people on the world are in total poverty. And he said, suddenly, the assistant to our professor of mathematics became ill and had to retire. And then the word got out that he was probably going to pick the best student in our senior class. And give him a job for only a few dollars. He could get us very cheap because we were just graduate students. But anyway, because of that, he said, we all crammed for the finals, and I crammed for the finals, and I crammed for the finals, and I crammed for the finals. I crammed so hard. Hard work pays off. Have you heard that around here this week? Hard work pays off. The only problem was he got to class late, and everybody was already working on their problems. He picked up his test on the desk, 8 problems. He solved them all, and then the 2 on the board. He couldn't solve them. And the class bell rang, and he said to the prof, he said, prof, there are a couple of problems I couldn't solve. Could I have a little more time? And the prof said, sure, but Friday noon, no later, bring your paper in. So he said, oh, I don't I knew that in that class somebody would solve all 10. I knew somebody would. I couldn't solve that one. Couldn't solve that one. I solved that one. I'm back to that one. And I couldn't solve it. And it was Friday morning. So I had to put the paper on his desk, knowing I missed one. Wondered how many got all 10. And I was going to the soup lines. Tomorrow was a Black Saturday. Then Sunday morning, there was a loud pounding at the door. Woke me up. It was the professor. He said, "George, George, you made mathematics history." I said, "What did I do?" He said, "Well, you came to class late." He said, "Did that make math history?" I said, "Oh, but you know, before you came in, I handed out the test papers, and I said, don't quit playing with problems. Make it a hobby the rest of your life." And he said, "I'll give you a couple that you can play with all your life. They're the two classical, unsolvable mathematical problems." I put them on the board. They were not part of the test. And I said to the class, even Einstein, to the end of his life, couldn't solve them. "George, you solved one." Then George Danzig said, "So I got the job." But then he looked at me and said, "Now, if I had been in class and heard him say, there are two impossible problems, did you think I would solve one of them?" Possibility thinkers, they dream great dreams, beautiful dreams, dreams that will make it a better world. People may think they're dumb, but they turn out to be the James Poppins. Again and again and again, I could talk to you for 10 hours to tell you the stories of great people who were never given much credit when they were in school. Nothing is impossible. So I invite you tonight to do what you've been doing in your life, and that is praying your prayers with positive thinking. And then you'll get a dream, young people. It'll probably be impossible, but then your job is to make it possible. And then when you're at it, put that dream in the driver's seat of your life and don't ever let it get pushed out by fear or worry or discouragement or any put down you may have heard. Only you can kick the dream out of your life. Don't do that. I want you to go out of here and remember 8 words that I said, and with that I'll let you eat. I know you have that hungry look about you. Believe in yourself. God does. He made you. He picked a man and a woman, genes and chromosomes, mixed them up, put them in an oven. 9 months later, you came out and never been anything that came out of the oven like you. You are different. You are distinctive. You are rare. You are one of a kind. God made you, and God don't make no junk. God knew what he was doing. Just find your dream. And affirm to yourself these 8 words. I am. I am somebody. I am. I'm a person. I can think. I can dream. I can make decisions. I can set impossible goals. I am. I can. I can turn something that's impossible and make it possible. I've been doing that for 37 years and I'm not quite finished. I am. I can. 2 kinds of people live in America. Some are Americans and some are Americans. Just be an American, not an American. I am. I can. Next 2 words, I will. When you get that dream from God, it's your turn. It's your turn to say, I will. And once you've said, I am, I can, I will, then the last 2 words, They're the last. I believe.
I believe. I believe. I believe. And if you have a down time, and we all have them, and you have a discouraging time, and we all have them, you don't quit. I had a telephone call one morning from the man who attended my church. His name was Walter Burke. He was McDonnell Douglas, president. He said, "Bob, I just got a call from the President of the United States, President Kennedy. And he said, we're going to put a man on the moon. I need your help." And he said, "Don't tell me it's impossible. We already know that." You have to figure out a way how the impossible could become possible. He said, "What I'm asking you to do is give us the power to get out of Earth's gravitational pull." That would have been done. And then Walter said to me, "Bob, you wrote that Possibility Thinker's Creed, and you've got it on a big poster behind your desk. I need one of those posters." So I had an extra one. I sent it to him. It was about 3 feet by 2 feet, called the Possibility Thinker's Creed by Robert Schuller. The Possibility Thinker's Creed. When faced with a mountain, I will not quit. I will keep on striving until I climb over, find a pass through, tunnel underneath, or simply stay and turn the mountain into a gold mine. I am a person. I can dream and make the right decisions. I will follow God's dreaming in my head. And I believe I will achieve. Thank you very much. Congratulations. God bless you.